question, we are moving on to a topic that most of you identified as a difficult topic for you, and that is the topic of plagiarism. Most students are either confused about plagiarism or concerned about plagiarism. So to start us off, we decided to display the definition of plagiarism that are currently found in the Code of Student Conduct. That's on the top. And the bottom is the definition and the policy on research ethics. So let's keep these definitions of plagiarism in our minds as a backdrop to the discussion that will follow. Now, we've devoted a longer segment to plagiarism because so many of you identified it as an important topic. And we are going to do two case studies involving different aspects of plagiarism. For the first case study, we're privileged to have our current Dean of Students, Professor Jane Everett, who's also a professor in the Département de Langue et Littérature Française, and who comes to the position of Dean of Students with experience as Acting Associate Dean, Student Affairs for the Faculty of Arts, and Associate Dean, Graduate and Postdoctoral Studies. Of course, as Dean of Students, while not a disciplinary officer, and this is something that not many students know, the Dean of Students is not a disciplinary officer, but the Dean of Students is responsible for the oversight of the entire student disciplinary process and for the education about academic integrity. So we're very privileged to have Dean Everett present the first case study to you and give you an overview of general issues on citation and plagiarism. Thanks, Jane.
Thanks, Professor Dukier. Hi, everyone. I thought I would start, before getting to the case study, which you have in your handout, a couple of general remarks about plagiarism. And this is something I find myself having to talk about quite often when I give talks to students, graduate students, and new faculty, is what do we mean by words such as plagiarism, citation, attribution, quotation? I've discovered in the over the years that there is a bit of confusion around those terms. We use them sometimes interchangeably, particularly when we're talking about citation and attribution. Some people think of citation meaning using quotation marks when you're taking exact wording from an original text. Some people think of citation meaning only indicating your source without necessarily throwing in quotation marks. Some people think that attribution is a global term to refer to both exact quotation and acknowledging sources when you're paraphrasing or acknowledging the source of an idea. So what I'm talking about today is all of those things to try and help you understand some of the distinctions. When do you use quotations for exact wording? When is it sufficient to indicate your source, which would be cases when you're paraphrasing or taking an idea and want to acknowledge that it's not your original idea, that you took it from somewhere else. But Professor Lametti will be touching a bit on the idea, on the question of ideas, taking ideas as well. That was one thing I wanted to mention as a preamble. The other thing has to do with the application of these precepts, or precepts concerning proper attribution, proper citation practice, proper referencing. It applies to everything you do. I've had people express to me doubts about it, saying, well, you know, my results are more important than all the sort of introductory matter. You know, the introduction, the conclusion, that stuff, that's just wording that I have to put in, because in a thesis you're supposed to say, yeah, I did this, I did that, I thanked so-and-so. And so, you know, I don't, you know, that doesn't really apply. I mean, where the ethics really comes in is whether I'm falsifying or fabricating. But really, you know, for it comes to quoting somebody's introduction from a thesis that was published about 5 years ago and reintroducing it in the introduction of my thesis because it says it well, that's okay. No. So just to be clear, that this applies to everything you produce. And it doesn't matter where it occurs in what you produce. Finally, can't read my writing here. I'd like to draw your attention to the definition of plagiarism that applies to students. This applies to graduate students, and postdocs, because at McGill, as you know, postdocs come under the Code of Student Conduct and Disciplinary Procedures, which is Chapter 6 in this lovely publication, which you all have received a copy of. People who didn't pick one up, you have a copy outside the room. Chapter 6 is the Code of Student Conduct and Disciplinary Procedures, and that's on page 23 of this book that you will find the definition of plagiarism, which you have up here. And it's a preamble, or it's part of the Article 15. At McGill, and this is important, at McGill, our definition of plagiarism includes the intent to deceive. In other words, but it is the burden is on the student to show that he or she did not have an intent to deceive. It's not always easy to do that. In fact, it's very difficult. The other thing you have received is Fair Play, which is something that was distributed to all students, new students at registration this year. There are copies available also outside, and it produces some of the more common scenarios we encounter as disciplinary officers. So let's go to our case study.
Here, I have it in front of me.
Yeah, okay, thanks. So what we have here is plagiarism in a lecture. Some of you teach already. Some of you are going to be teachers. This is something that would happen also whether if you're making a PowerPoint presentation in a course or at a conference. So this we tried to address in this case study, issues of common knowledge, paraphrasing, exact quotations, how do you distinguish between them? We had some lively discussions about it in the organization committee on this subject. So here we have Professor X, who wants to give a lecture on the evolution of settlement patterns in Canada. And some of the information she provides comes from the 2006 population census report on population, and you have a handout. This is the text, some of the text she uses in her two of her slides. This is the table she reproduces in, or she copied, into slide 2. And here are her first few slides in her lecture. So she says, second largest country in the world, Canada is made up of 10 provinces and 3 territories, covering in total almost 10 million square kilometers. And then she throws in a map. She gets this map from a site that allows free downloading of images. So slide 1. Slide 2. There's that table that you have on your handout.
Should we vote slide by slide, or should we go through the whole thing?
What were we going to do? We were going to do it
slide by slide.
Okay, so let's go to slide 1.
Right.
Look at the language of that first sentence. The second largest country in the world, Canada is made up of 10 provinces and 3 territories, covering in total almost 10 million square kilometers. If you look at this text, you'll see that some of the wording is identical. Look in the first paragraph, and in the fourth paragraph.
And take out your clickers and answer the question. In this slide 1, has Prof. X plagiarized? Yes? No? Not sure.
Bearing in mind McGill's definition of plagiarism for students, or no, for profs, same thing. It's pretty much the same.
We done? Okay. And the results are? The majority of the votes, 47% of you say no, 39% of you say yes, 14% say not sure. Before we go on to the second slide, and before I ask Dean Everett to say a few words, this is sometimes, you know, a truth is stranger than fiction. When I was sitting in the organizing committee and Dean Everett was proposing this particular scenario, I was sort of slinking under the table because I had just submitted, sent off a report for a conference that I had written, the International Congress of Comparative Law, and the opening sentence of my first page reads, quote, on my own quotes, Canada is a country of 33.8 million people, populating a vast geographic area of almost 10 million square kilometers, stretching 8,000 kilometers from the Atlantic to the Pacific Oceans. Although I have 190 footnotes in my 39-page report, I did not cite that sentence. So I thought, uh-oh, I better come to this academic integrity workshop. So thank you to the 47% who didn't think I did anything wrong.
Those results are very much what I expected, because this is a really tough one, having to do with common knowledge, among other things, and the fact that there are only so many ways you can say that Canada is the second largest city country in the world. There are only so many ways you can say how big it is. And there are only so many ways you can say how many provinces and territories it has, particularly if you have a map at the bottom of the page showing you 10 provinces and 3 territories. So I guess for me the issue here, because I've struggled with this one, and I'm really not sure. I think what's important, though, is that you give a source for that information, particularly if you think you're going to be giving that information to people who may not know that information. I grew up here. I grew up in Quebec. I consider, from my perspective, that it's common knowledge that we have 10 provinces and 3 territories. The second largest country bit, if I thought about it, I'd probably say, oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, there is one larger, but we're kind of up there. I wouldn't have known the square kilometers bit at all. I would have guessed something. So that information, from my perspective, is something I would give a source for. Now, would I give quotation marks? Let's look at the text from the portrait. With a land area of close to 10 million square kilometers. Well, almost 10 million square kilometers. Have I paraphrased there? Well, I've quoted directly 10 million square kilometers. But, you know, really, personally, I don't think, as a disciplinary officer, that I would tell a student that he or she is plagiarized by not putting quotation marks around there. 10 million square kilometers, you can't. It's like saying E equals MC squared or whatever that is, and saying that that's being plagiarized because I took it from, you know, a physics textbook or something like that. So why I'm raising the issue here, and I'm not going to claim that I'm solving it, if the professor has put this up on her slide, she still needs to give some indication to the students of where she got the information, because students might want to follow up on it. This has come from a census document, or she's using that to support her demonstration. So she has at some point to give the source for that. So we'll leave that here for the moment.
Right. And we'll go on to slide 2, just to say that part of the issue here is common knowledge, right? Do we have to cite and attribute what we think is common knowledge? What is common knowledge? I obviously know more geography than Dean Everett. I did know it was close to 10 million kilometers, right? I mean, what's common knowledge to me may not be common knowledge to someone else. That's the issue that really that slide raises. Now, second slide.
Now, the second slide, we have a table. And what is our second question? Please note here, there is no indication of a source, right? So we have all these statistics. No source.
So, slide 2. Has Prof. X plagiarized by putting up this table that was taken from the census, but there's no attribution on the slide to where the table came from? Is that plagiarism? Yes? No? Maybe? I hear clickers going. Keep going. Everybody done? Okay. Ah. So we're getting more black and white here, right? We're getting less gray. Uh-huh. So here most of you think, cross the line. What do you think?
Okay, so this is where we had some debate about that. The case has been made that because this is part of a total presentation where eventually the source is given, you don't have to put it here because everyone knows where it comes from. The case could also be made that if someone were to take that slide from the PowerPoint presentation and use it at some other point without knowing what the source is, they would be in trouble. You can't say that this is common knowledge.
Right.
Well, I can. Granted, my knowledge of geography is poor, but I defy anyone to say that this is common knowledge.
That's not common knowledge.
It's not paraphrasing, clearly.
It's copying.
So it's copying.
Let's go to the third slide.
No, we're still on the second slide now.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. So we think it might be plagiarism. What's the correspondence between, if it's plagiarism, has proper citation practice been used? Because this may be particularly interesting for the people who didn't think it was plagiarism.
I think we have to state that it's on another slide they do actually...
Yeah.
Slide three gives the source.
Yeah.
So the site is in the PowerPoint presentation, but not on the very slide of the chart. So the question is, has Professor X used proper citation practice in slide 2, knowing that it has been cited, but in slide 3, not on the very slide? So I guess the exact question is, do you have to cite it on the very slide? And so is proper citation done? Yes, no, maybe.
Actually, we probably could have condensed those two questions now that I think about it. But
no, but good.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
So the issue here is it okay to put it somewhere in your presentation but not on the very slide? And most of you think that it would be more appropriate to put it on the very slide, and I think we agree.
Yeah, it's better to be safe than sorry. I put the source everywhere, basically. So just so that there are no questions, it's understandable why you might not wish to clutter up your slide with this fairly lengthy quote or source, but it's probably safe to cite properly in these instances. This is the third slide. It talks about the distribution of Canada's population, and I refer you once again to the text of the census itself. Most of Canada's 31.6 million inhabitants live in the southern part of the country. There we have the source. If you look at the text, the 31.6 million is mentioned in the very first paragraph.
And it's out of date.
And if you look in the fourth paragraph, we have the southern part of the country is also home to Canada's largest urban centers where population density averages. It's the third paragraph. Yet Canada's population is not spread evenly over its territory. Most Canadians live in the southern part of the country. So there we have, live in the southern part of the country is an exact quote.
And what about using the cartoon?
And then we have the cartoon. So this is a cartoon. This prof is given, it's published in 1997. Gives the title of the newspaper, the day, the month, the year, and the page numbers. And it's a syndicated cartoon. And it's a cartoon that shows, makes some sort of joke about Canadians liking to go south in the winter. And that might explain why they're all populated and living in the south of the country. Because that's the nearest they can get to Florida without changing countries. Professor X is given to really lame jokes. So, but this cartoon is still something that's been copied. There's attribution. So
now I use cartoons all the time, so I am dying to hear what you think about whether this prof, which could be me, has done something right or wrong. So is it all right for a prof to, scan and then put on a slide, on a PowerPoint slide? Very easy to do. If I can do it, it's easy to do. A cartoon, as long as that professor gives the title, date, and page of the issue it appeared in. Is that all right? Yes, no, maybe. Voting time. It's all right. Am I safe?
I don't know. I think I'm going to defer to Professor Lametti on this one.
Well, yeah, in terms of copyright protection. I'll have more to say about it later, but I do believe this is fair dealing in the academic context. You're teaching, you're educating, you have cited, so there aren't any moral rights violations, and you're not there to make a profit from it. So my sense is this would be just fine. The Canadian Copyright Act protects professors presenting, so anyone presenting, and I think with respect to students, there's something that's called fair dealing as an argument for the purposes of research and private study that would doubly protect the professor in a university environment in this kind of question.
Great, thanks. And then we have one final question for you, because is it different if the professor uses his PowerPoint presentation like I do in my classroom and just leave it at that? I don't post my PowerPoints on WebCT. But a lot of professors do. So what if the professor then says, okay, I want to be a nice guy and post the PowerPoint that I used in class for those of you who didn't come or for those of you who'd like to have a copy of it when you're studying, and posted on, you know, my courses, WebCT, which, of course, you know, only those who are registered in the course can get access to that PowerPoint. Does that change the situation? So is that okay? Yes? Is that not okay? Are we less sure? Vote. Final vote in this case study. So it's all right. Okay? And is it all right because it's like an intranet thing, because it's something that you have to have access to? Is that why? Is that what motivated most of you? I see some heads nodding.
Okay, so it's all right to post on WebCT slides that a majority of you have said violate proper citation practice? So that was kind of my little hesitation here. So there are a couple of issues, right? One is, obviously, if you're going to post something on WebCT, you want to make sure that it models appropriate citation practice and that it could serve as a reference for those who will be reading it, either your students or if you're using it in a conference and it's being distributed in some way. Now, obviously, this is going to be WebCT. We're looking at it in the classroom situation, but this would apply to other contexts as well. The issue with WebCT, yes, it's only available to the people registered in the course. You have to figure out whether the material in a course, and that's only limited availability, is the same rules regarding fair dealing apply to that. And I think that's, again, where Dr. Lametti can help us, or Professor Lametti can help us.
And don't forget, something that gets posted on WebCT can be easily downloaded onto your own computer and then disseminated more broadly. Right? So with that, I'd really like to thank the Dean of Students. Thank you so much. And now I'd like to thank you. And now I'd like to call up my colleague, Professor David Lametti, to lead us in a discussion of another case study on plagiarism, which you'll see is very different. But plagiarism is so multifaceted that we decided to take another crack at it, but this time one that involves students doing group work. And many of you identified group work as an issue that you want to discuss. So my colleague in the Faculty of Law, Professor David Lametti, is currently serving as Associate Dean Academic, and of course in that capacity he's a disciplinary officer and has a lot to say about plagiarism. So, David.
Thank you, Rosalie. Let me say that I'm the disciplinary officer for undergraduate students, so you can all be honest with me. You'll never see me in front of you. You will see me at Thompson House when the World Cup starts. I'm the easy one to identify. I'm the only one cheering for Italy. I know in terms of soccer integrity, not academic integrity, the Azzurri have been the bad boys of soccer until they've been recently displaced by the French and Thierry Henry. So there we go. That's soccer integrity. Now back to academic integrity. Let me just say that I will try to get back to some of those copyright issues about WebCT, fair dealing, fair use, as it's called in the United States, towards the end of the morning when I'm up on copyright issues in particular. Okay. Group work. Here's a case study. I'm going to ask you to read it, and we'll have some quicker questions for you afterwards. It involves students getting together to do work on a project and also the relationship that they have in preparation of that project with a teaching assistant.
Okay. We've also prepared some discussion questions. Maybe we'll get the first one up. Again, we're going to rely on your clicker answers. So A, B, and C, they're all enrolled in the same course, same prof, they're in the same tutorial group with the same TA, and they're allowed to work together, but you have to submit independently, and you know what they do. They write their papers in different locations, but they do meet for coffee, and they talk to each other. And then, of course, there are found out to be some identical passages in them. So have A, B, and C committed some academic offense with respect to the writing of the assignment? I think this is a question that most of us can relate to, as at one time or another in our academic careers as undergraduates or graduate students, we were in this situation. So love to hear what you think. Are we voted? Okay. So most of you do think that they have committed some academic offense, but 35% of you don't. Anybody want to represent the yeses and tell us why you voted that way? You didn't vote. No, you did vote. But we'll get to you. Don't worry. I see the mic in your hand. Don't worry. Anybody want to defend the position before I let Andre Christopoulos at it? No? Okay. Well, go for it.
Okay. This one is from my files. I actually had to rule on this, and my ruling earned me the eternal hostility of one particular science department. So let's see. What was my thought process there? The students actually, the first thing that I realized was that the students independently had access to that source, which wasn't a literary source, which didn't come from anywhere. And by questioning and by investigating, I found out that the source was, in fact, a statement by a TA in a conference section that had been, taken down verbatim by all the students. And then I had to decide, is it plagiarism if you essentially put your class notes in your assignment, if you use your class notes as a source? Now, as a lecturer, as an instructor, I often read myself in students' assignments. Right, students hand me papers that have extensive verbatim quotes from me, things that I said during lectures or in office hours or in conference sections.
Andre, that's actually going to be the next question with respect to the relationship with the TA and TA's quotes.
Am I going ahead?
Yeah, it's the next question.
Can I get you to hold off for now?
Yes, please.
Okay. The focus here is said write independently. Okay? So the assignment says they're supposed to write out their submissions independently of other students. Now they get together for coffee at least twice, it says. They've brainstormed, they've worked together all the way through. So independently of whatever happened with the TA, have these students done something wrong? And the majority of you think they have.
Let me just take this occasion to quote from section 15. C, paragraph C of the Code of Student Conduct. Plagiarism also includes, now this is a little bit counterintuitive, right? You think of plagiarism as copying from a published source or not attributing your idea to a published source. But 15C says, no student shall contribute any work to another student. So just to make you understand that, when there is group work and you are told that although you're allowed to work in a group, but your submission must be your very own, contributing to another student's submission is potentially a violation of plagiarism. So it may not be obvious that that's potentially plagiarism. But most of you recognize that it probably is. But it's a very difficult one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. We have a table 16. We've got a comment, and a mic is on its way.
Yes, yes, because it says work independently.
Okay. I would just say that maybe technically it's plagiarism, but I don't think you can reasonably expect students, if they work together for an entire group, like, to then never discuss their writing of their paper. I don't think that's a reasonable assumption, especially for undergraduate students.
Okay. We've had this in the law faculty, because one of the practices in the law faculty amongst a number of my colleagues, including myself, is to have take-home exams. So exams which have a question or a series of questions over a period of 7, 24, 48 hours, a whole week from time to time, and you'll see this often too in some of the humanities. There we have asked over a period of years, because we did have cases that cannot, not in my tenure, but some of my predecessors, we have asked professors to be more specific in terms of their instructions on the take-home. So no collaboration whatsoever, for example, has to be clear. This kind of thing is more difficult, but here the professor will have to try to specify. You can initially share research, etc., but when it comes down to writing, you have to write on your own. And in this case, I think you probably could find. I know that some of you think it's unrealistic, but it's up to students to act in a I would call a virtuous manner with respect to the instructions. Some instructions say complete collaboration, and some will even say you may submit the same joint piece of work. So there's a whole spectrum there. I think from a student perspective, what you may want to take away from this is that if you see this kind of instruction and you have any questions, you ask the professor, you ask the TA. And if you're a professor or if you're acting as a TA for a professor, and some of you will be in that situation, if you're unclear, ask the professor, such that you and with your other TAs, ask the professor, make it clear what's acceptable, or at least try to get a handle on what's acceptable at the outset so you can convey that to students.
Okay. Great. We're going to move on to the second question, which does involve the TA. But just as an aside, in one of my classes, I do ask for group work, which is worth 20 or 25% of the grade. And I tell the students it's going to be one mark for the entire group, because frankly, I just don't know how to get into this. I just don't know how to do it, and I say, well, you're four of you in a group, you're going to work together, and it's going to be one mark that all four of you are going to get. All right, okay. But now we're going to complicate it a little bit, and here we're going to call on you in a moment, to say the complicating factor here is not only that they've worked together, but that they have used direct quotes from the TA's notes, or what the TA has said to them, without attribution. That may complicate this. Is using the TA's words without attribution plagiarism? Now, on that more specific point, yes, no, maybe. Let's vote. Voting done? Aha. So, again, pretty similar results. Last time, if I remember, it was 57%. This time it's 55% of you, so slightly more than half think that, yes, using TA words without attribution is plagiarism. So now we want your comments.
I disagree. That's my comment. As I was saying, when I was running ahead, I often read myself in assignments, and I can't expect really. Oh, I don't expect students to cite everything that I say in class. I had this discussion with my students yesterday in a very large course, very large auditorium course, and I told them. And maybe that's important that we need to specify these things as instructors. You know, I told them, because someone said in class, asked, should we cite what you say in class? And I said, well, let's have a commons agreement about what happens in this room, right, about what happens in the lecture. I'm not the only one who talks in the lectures. People ask questions. They make comments. We have interplay. And extend that to office hours and extend that to to conference sections, that what happens there is our common property because we work on it together. And so if you bring it up in your assignment, I know where it comes from. And it's not a mystery to me, and it's not a problem, and therefore it's not improper use of the material. You're not, it's not as if you're trying to present material that I produced as your own to me, right, back to me. We all know where it comes from. And to me, then that doesn't rise to a breach of the plagiarism articles in the code.
We have two questions at table 15.
I'm very familiar with this scenario. It's happened pretty much exactly to me. Two students came to me in office hours, asked about a particular question on an assignment. I led them towards the answer, and they quoted the answer verbatim on an assignment. And, of course, the answers were identical, and they got called for plagiarism. But they felt it was okay because they were writing what I had told them down verbatim, even though it was exactly the same. So I'm wondering if it's different if it's in an assignment versus common knowledge like given in a lecture.
Did they cite you? Did they attribute you?
No, not at all.
Did you feel that they had plagiarized your...
I did, and I actually felt plagiarized that they were using my exact words as if they were their own.
So I think what we need to do is, if this is something that we don't usually think about...
Where's your mic?
That we usually don't think about when we make plagiarism rules and when we write our course outlines, but clearly it's something that we need to include. We need to include as part of the discussion. You know, and maybe this is a lesson that we can learn as an institution, that we make, let's have a statement on the course outline that says what is the status for in this course of lecture material, office hour material, etc. If some people feel it should be cited, fine. If some people feel that it doesn't need to be, fine. As long as it's clear, as the expectations are clear at the outset, I think that's what's important. And we're in a gray area here, so we need everybody to specify for their own, in their own kingdom, if you will, in their own, you know.
Let me weigh in just a moment. You probably would have been happier if they'd cited you, right? If they'd at least used your name.
Well, if they'd given their own answers as opposed to giving mine,
right.
Ideally.
fair enough. But as just a general rule of thumb, if you're using somebody's exact words, something should click that you should at least attribute them. I mean, I think there's a difference in context. If it's in a course assignment or an exam, I don't mind if people use my words. They'll often say, as Professor Lametti said, in class or something like that, which is fine. If the more it becomes detached from the course, so a standalone assignment, or certainly if it goes out into the public discourse as a published article, has to be cited at that point. But if you're using exact words, something's got to click. Okay, I should at least say where this came from. As I discussed with my TA, it could be as informal as that, or even cite the TA, cite the meeting time or whatever. There you can be angry that for academic reasons that they didn't use their own words, but harder to be from a disciplinary officer's perspective, harder to be angry from that point of view.
When in doubt, cite. There's a table 14 has something to say. Oh, I'm so sorry. Table 15, go ahead.
When did the TA become a source? When did you know, what we said in class become a citable thing? I think in this situation, the students were just silly to have cited the TA, those three sentences that the TA said, because though the TA might have been a very bright individual, I'm pretty sure that there could have been another primary source that would be more easy to cite or would provide a more clear source.
Some of you are brilliant. Some of you are brilliant.
But let me reread section 15C. No student shall contribute any work to another student with the knowledge of the law. I mean, TA is a student. So plagiarizing a student is a
student. At the same time, most of the time.
Pass the mic, please.
But a TA, I think a TA can be a source. It's part of a constructive dialogue. Education is part of a dialogue between and amongst professors, students, TAs. Everyone's part of the mix. And I think it's good practice to cite where the particular point came from. If it's verbatim where the quote came from, I don't see any reason why a TA can't be a legitimate source. You're in positions of responsibility and teaching positions of responsibility. You should take it responsibly. And students should take what you say seriously.
We have a table of 15.
I was just going to say something supporting your idea. Also, if you think about it, all of our knowledge is based on someone's knowledge. Like my name, should I cite my name and using my parents gave me my name? Or at the same time, most of the time, the TAs are the ones who are grading it. So when I was an undergrad, I was feeling that if I don't use the same words as the TA, I will get a lower grade. So at the same time, there's those pressures too. But just mentioning it briefly, as we discussed in our session with our TA, this might be a good solution for that.
I think it would be. There is a cultural context here. There are some cultures in which it is a very high form, and particularly for graduate students, a very high form of praise, citing the professor or citing the teacher's words exactly or almost exactly. And that's part of the pedagogy in some cultures. It is not, I think, true to say that that's the pedagogy here. So, again, if you're using exact words, do cite. If you think that you ought to cite for moral reasons, even if you're not using the exact words, citing an idea or something like that, then by all means, trust that inclination and cite.
We're almost running out of time, and I know you're all anxious for the food for which you all came, the food for thought and the actual food, but I do want the Dean of Students to weigh in here, and I have one student who's had his hand up for a long time at table 14. So first, Dean Everett.
Just to address the question of why would you cite a TA, I agree with David. It's because our TAs are part of what the message and the information that is given to students. But just to base on my own experience as a prof of literature, I often receive essays. Students have written, they've attended my courses on history of literature, and they want to use something I said in class to buttress their argument. So from their perspective, it's a legitimate source, an authority they can cite. And the way they cite it is simply as a footnote saying something along the lines of lecture such and such given on such and such a day in such and such a course. And I think that's appropriate because they want to indicate to me that they are not inventing this information, that they want to show me that they recognize that it comes from an appropriate source, and they assume that my lecture is an appropriate source. And I would say that might be the same thing in a conference. So that would be just my contribution here.
Final comment from table 14.
Yeah, I want to say that why would the students would have to create their own ideas if the answers are given directly from the TA? Like, then the TA shouldn't have said that, oh, I can't tell you the answer. You have to create your own answer. Like, otherwise, well, how would they know if this is the correct answer is given directly to them, if it is plagiarism or not?
So, again, this is the responsibility on the part of the TA to properly advise students who come into his or her office and ask direct questions about assignments. I think the lessons learned here are when in doubt, cite. You're never going to be in trouble if you cite, but you could be in trouble if you don't. And the most important thing is you're not in this alone. There are people to ask. Don't just put this all on your own shoulders. Ask your advisor. Ask the disciplinary officer. Ask Sarah. Ask the librarian, right? Ask the Dean of Students' Office. We're going to put up at the end a lot of resources for you to consult. You're not in this alone. But now we're going to take a little bit of a break. I think you deserve one. If we could get back to our tables at 11 o'clock, enjoy the refreshments. Thank you all. Thank you, Professor Lametti.